Hello and welcome to the Kroll Summer Podcast. My name is James.
This is Marco Sparks. What up?
What up? Welcome back. We're here to talk about Season 2, Episode 7 of Kroll Summer, entitled It's the End of the World. Parentheses, as we know it. Why not just do the whole title? We know what you're referencing.
Yeah.
Time I had some time alone. This episode, written by Matt Morgan and L. Treedman, the showrunner, and directed by Bill Purple. So this is like a quote-unquote like big episode. This would be like when like Joss would like randomly direct like a mid-season episode of Buffy or something.
Yeah.
Did this feel like a big episode to you?
Well, it's the party.
Yeah. Not a whole lot happens at the party.
No. It's the party.
Kind of like any other party they've had.
Quite frankly, the party might be the most insulting detail.
Party sucks.
Well, just, I know you're not supposed to think about it. It's you know, like Hitchcock said, a critic who speaks about plausibility is a tedious man indeed. But like, they have nothing at like, let's say 10 o'clock in the morning. And then by midnight, they have a full catered, decorated affair.
They went to Party City, man. They got the stuff.
Who? Just Luke?
Luke and Megan there, yeah. Oh man, I did not enjoy this episode.
There are
so many just incredibly stupid things that happened in it, just related to basic plausibility that it just hurt my brain.
The note I wrote down before watching this episode is, will we ever see Debbie get sick?
From eating all the paint chips?
Yeah, but I guess she has, quote unquote, the flu. I mean, what does she have? Does she have
Earlier she was like taking pills or something.
Yeah. Well, it's implied that Isabella had to stay because Debbie got sick.
Yeah.
Is it the big C?
She seems fine in summer 2000. So.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Just more bad writing. I feel like they were writing episodes 1, 2, and 3 of the show without knowing what was going in episodes 6, 7, and 8. So. A lot of stuff is like happening in these past few episodes of certain characters, or it's like, oh, maybe you should have set this up earlier.
Also, I know his name is spelled differently, but there's something just so funny and dumb about a character whose last name is Fonts.
Fonts.
Like, why not Ned Helvetica?
Yeah.
Ned Comic Sans. Ned Copperplate Gothic. Ned,
oh, we're trying to make him a character suddenly.
Well, like when the one guy is just yelling like, Fonts! Mm-hmm.
I'll get you, Palantino. The events that are about to unfold take place on around July 31st, 1999, December 31st, 1999, and July 31st, 2000. I was confused by this because then on 1999 summer, a DJ is waking us up and it's like, good morning, Chatham. Get out there for the last rays of summer. And it's like, it's the middle of summer. Like July 31st is like almost dead in the center of summer. So what are you talking about?
Well, isn't the end of the season technically
September 21st?
Yeah.
Yeah. Like I mean, summer's not even half over yet, you weirdo.
I guess they're going by a pseudo school calendar-ish somewhere in August. You're going back to school.
It starts a month before Labor Day. Like, I feel like practically speaking, a lot of people kind of consider summer to end around like Labor Day, you know?
Right.
Happy Labor Day. But yeah, like, I don't know, just more bad dialogue on the show. More just like, I don't know, sloppy, not checking your work dialogue.
The thing where they spent some money this time was on music rights.
Oh yeah, we got some fucking...
I got TLC Fortis at the beginning head. Of this?
Yeah.
Yeah.
They use like a Counting Crows song later that's like from Full Intentions.
Yes,
like,
they do.
You can't just steal this like one like romance song from another movie and like put it in your, I don't know. It's just weird.
Yeah. Well, I like how they start it right at the part where he's just like, I am ready. Mm-hmm. This show hurts. Also, hello to Michelle Purple who likes her tweets. I hope you're not listening. Oh, no. I feel bad.
Oh, no.
Unless you're hiring for Kroll Summer Season 3. I feel like
here's my pitch. We can't do worse.
Yeah, any pitch has to be better. I was interesting. So she got her start, it looks like, as an assistant to one of the producers on Memento.
The movie?
Yeah.
That's like an indie movie. How many producers could there be on that?
Well, I'm sure there was probably quite a few talking about early investors.
All right.
Anyway.
Don't believe her lies.
It's a great movie. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I don't know.
Speaking of a tournament of lies, Megan and Isabel have slept in the same bed last night. This is like the party was yesterday when their boy got himself a lap dance and then almost puked in Megan's face.
Did they seem like just shit-faced in that whole sequence with Debbie and Steve?
No, not at all.
Like, should they be this hungover?
I mean, I don't know. It may be just because they're kids, you know? Maybe.
I don't know.
It's weird. The way this episode picks up, it's like, I don't remember the end of the last episode, like, fitting together with this, where like Megan's like despondent, like, oh, it was a bad dream, you know, it was so awkward, you know, he almost barfed in my face. It was just like, I don't know, she didn't seem awkward later in the last episode, like after that scene occurred, but now she's like, it's like all she's thinking about.
I feel like it's a crime. What is the actress name? Lexi Underwood. It's a crime at how good they make her look in this era. And how terribly they're serving her in the other two. The
2000s era especially is, yeah.
Well, like, she's like, looks like she's glowing. Like you think she's just going to like kiss Megan at any point now.
I mean, the green tint is not doing anyone any favors in 2000.
Yeah, and it's just, it's like, it's not kind to anyone's makeup in those like Matrix plate or Matrix toned eras. Yeah, so then we get to the winter 99 where Megan's a little bit colder when Isabella comes up.
Mm-hmm. She's been told that she was like making moves on her boyfriend by her boyfriend.
Yeah. Yeah. And so there's going to be a big question is hanging over this is like, is technology just going to fucking turn on us at midnight tonight?
Yeah, which I don't know. I mean, it was there a little bit in 99, but like by the time, like we'd been hearing about Y2K for like 2 years up by this point, and it was like, I kind of knew, like, yeah, they got it. It's not going to be a big deal.
Mm-hmm.
Also, episode 7 of a 10-episode show seems a little late to bring in, like, the millennial paranoia. Like, I feel like we should have been introducing that with our Ned character a lot sooner. He didn't even seem that paranoid in the last episode.
No, he is unhinged in his one scene about it. Like it like seems like he's like in a weird Y2K cult.
Mm-hmm. So Megan's doing the thing where she's like, oh, how was the plunge? You know, and just like, let's see how you react to it. And Isabella's just like, oh, it was cold and wet. Is she describing a kiss? I don't know.
Well, it's almost like an Aria Montgomery thing where like Megan is like looking at herself in the mirror as Isabella stands behind her.
Well, I feel like there's a very double meaning here. Like, how was it? It was cold and wet. I'm glad I did it, but I don't need to do it again. It's like, oh, what are you talking about? Kissing my boyfriend? You know?
Yeah. There's a lot of just sinister Megan stares as Isabella leaves.
My New Year's resolution is to start fresh this year. You know, put the past behind us.
Isabella calls Megan sloppy, but
Isabella says I want to be less of a slob, and Megan's like, well, you do like it messy, don't you?
Yeah, well, I would say in the previous scene in the summer 99 one, Isabella calls Megan sloppy, and I was like, well, that is Isabella's type, right? And then it's like this weird merging here as we go to the summer 2000. She's kind of dressed like summer 99 Megan. Like just like shorts and like a t-shirt, but she's got like the motor oil greased hair,
yeah,
or whatever. And then the fucking lawyer is back.
This fucking guy, he's like, Debbie got sick eating paint chips, so I'll be the only adult you interact with today. I mean, could they just not have the Debbie actress or something? Or are they maybe the only budgeter for 8 out of 10 episodes or something?
The problem is she was in her trailer eating her script.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's not like, make fun of the actress. Come on.
But I mean, it's an interesting episode because it's like they couldn't get Debbie in this one. They couldn't get the sheriff in this one. So we need more Steve.
Yeah. So lawyer got a call from the sheriff. we need to go down to the station. She's like, why? You didn't give me any details. Just that you're being officially charged. It's so dumb that the sheriff is not in this episode, because like the entire plot line of 2000 here mm-hmm. makes no sense at all. Like it beggars belief. It's so stupid. But like, there's a way you could have written this to have it make sense, but I guess the writers just aren't there for it.
Yeah. Well, also, how was your mom not going to the station
yeah,
with you?
Yeah. She's sick. I don't know.
Back to summer 99 as the girls are cleaning up at the party. So
didn't it seem like they'd kind of already cleaned up at the end of the last episode? And now it's like crazy party, red cups everywhere, food everywhere. Like,
did Debbie and Steve do this?
Yeah, they tied one on.
Yeah, like it's like this part, this living room has like regressed. They find like a single sock left behind, which means that one of these creeps is like been like jerking off in their sock somewhere, right, at the party.
I mean, I hope so. Yeah.
Well, like the problem is there's a Tim and there's a Freddy, and I think they're supposed to be interchangeable. Yeah,
no idea who those people are. I know that there's an Eric, and we know Jeff, of course. Tim and Freddy. And I think there's one other dude too, maybe, who I just like forgetting.
Yeah. So Luke shows up. He's inexplicably drawn because the script pulled him here. He looks as confused as why he's here as well. Megan's a little awkward because, you know, she revealed.
I assume he came over to talk to her. Like, I guess that's how I'm charitably reading this. It's like he doesn't really have an excuse to be there, but obviously he wanted to, like, you know, see Megan. He must remember it.
Yeah. And then, well, I mean, the only thing would have been better is if he actually threw up in her face at that moment. But Isabella is just like, oh, you're obviously here to clean, right? Here's a thing of trash bags. Then we cut back to winter 99 as they're shopping on the Y2K festive aisle at like the Home Depot or whatever.
Getting some Y2 cocktails, make them Y2 crazy is the banter from
Y2 Crunk.
Y2 Crunk, yeah. And from what's his face here? I can't, Luke. And Megan says Y2 cut it out. All with K's, by the way, in the subtitles.
There are like two actual euphemisms from the era in this episode, and one that is painfully not. She's going to talk about how it's weird that everything is good between her and Luke right now. And it's like, except for the sex tape.
I guess they're past it. You know, it's been three weeks or whatever. Ago. Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, they're buying. I mean, this is not enough decorations for this party. This makes no sense. This party is insulting.
They're buying like all these like the dumb 2000 sunglasses and like the New Year's hats and whatnot. Like, I don't know. Do you have to buy all those? Can't you? Like, you're a bunch of teenagers. People can show up with their own shit.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, what is Luke's party budget here?
Oh, it's easily $20,000.
It seems like it, yeah.
The lights alone. The fucking lights alone. And then you start actually buying alcohol.
I mean, when we were teenagers, if we were to go get like year 2000 sunglasses, we would each buy our own. It wouldn't just be like, hey, man, I'll get all the party hats. You'd be like, no, I'll buy my party hat.
What? I mean, has he accepted his burden as the little rich boy?
I guess so. I mean, later in this episode, we're going to get a sudden heel turn from Luke here, which I'll have thoughts about that when we get there.
Well, like, okay, but so this is supposed to be a party at this point at Tim's house or whatever.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
This makes sense. What they're doing makes sense to that. But the problem is that where they end up, which I don't know what time of day when he gets those keys and like takes that over that venue, the level of
it
party
has to be,
makes
it can't
no
be before like
sense.
2 p.m. when they get those keys. Yeah.
But you don't have enough time to decorate. And even if you did, you're not making it to midnight because you're fucking exhausted. Why can't they have said, we've been planning this party for a week?
Yeah.
You know, like that's so easy.
Why all this drama about having it at the cannery in the first place? Like, is this really going anywhere?
I know.
You know, there's a lot of groundwork laid about like we can't do it here. We have to do it at the cannery, and then I have to go see my dad and like steal the key for the cannery. It's like, does it really matter that much that you had it at the cannery?
Well,
they could have just like not said anything and like shown a party in a warehouse, and I think we would have both been like, whatever, that's a party. Yeah,
Luke's party, fine, cool. But like, I think earlier in the when they're interrogating the five kids that these kids know, mm-hmm. somebody mentions that Luke and Megan left early. If you've illicitly broken into your dad's cannery, like, aren't you there to close to like make sure everyone leaves?
Not if you think you're going to go get a threesome.
Apparently. Mm-hmm. Apparently. Well, like, okay, I have a lot of questions about the actual layout of scenes and reveals in this episode. So he puts a hat on her here that's almost like a Statue of Liberty-esque happy Y2K hat.
Yeah, so he has some dialogue. Like, Megan is fishing some more about Isabel and the kiss thing. Like, why would she do that? You know, like, I thought she wanted us to get together. It doesn't make sense. And he's just like, you know, all being all lovey-dovey. And, you know, Isabel's just, she's just jealous. She's possessive. Like, she always wants to be able to, like, swoop in and, like, cape up and, like, be the BFF. But, like, if we're, you know, having good times, that can't happen. So she, you know, she has to, like, cause drama, you know.
But, like, it's classic gaslighting because she's like, I've never noticed that. I've never felt that. And he's like, oh, sure you have or whatever. Like, we're just missing from season one, like, cutting to the therapist explaining to Olivia Holt. Mm-hmm. That's classic gaslighting.
It is and it isn't, because like Isabella is like very single white female. And so like, I don't know if it's being entirely uncharitable to suggest that she's a little weird about her friendship.
I think in this particular moment, you're right. Isabella is a horrible person. She comes off better because
in relation to this douchebag. Yeah.
Yeah. We know that he's manipulating her about this particular thread.
All of a sudden in episode 7. Yeah, I don't know. I have a lot of problems with that.
And he's like, yeah, we're strong. Nothing come between us. He even says, hella. You don't live in California, buddy.
Yeah, yeah. Get the fuck out of here. You're not from the East Bay. Can I tell my East Bay joke?
Sure.
How many fools from the East Bay does it take to screw in a light bulb?
Hella?
Hella fools. When it was done, it was hella tight. Cool. All right, continue.
There's some people who might chuckle at that, but there's like three of us who really feel it.
Mm-hmm. If you know, you know.
All right, so then because they had one full day of Paul Adelstein in an office, we get the winter or the summer 2000 where he's like meeting with Brent, updating Brent about the PI.
Fucking Brent. Real quick, just on that last scene, it ends with him just being like, oh, your friend kind of sucks. She's just jealous. But like Megan, she still's got a sneer on her face at the end of the scene. Like, I don't think she's totally buying it. But yeah, then like, Steve has called Brent, the good son, into his office to be like, check out these photos. I had this PI take. I got to keep you updated on my case.
Here's the deal about Steve. He had an heir and a spare.
Yeah.
He's got one.
Well, Steve 100% did it, right? Like, this is just so obvious. Like, I'm going to find some dirt dependent on this guy I hate.
I feel like somebody has been saying that all along. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, no, I know. I know you did. Yeah. I'm agreeing with you.
The secrets where he's updating Brent as Brent's our audience proxy.
Brent's also, just this like, episode, am I a good guy again? Why am I in this episode?
This episode has ordained Brent as a good dude.
Mm-hmm.
Right? There is no
sure
sleaze.
He's just a little racist and misogynist, you know, but he's got a good heart or something.
Yeah. So like, he's just like, my PI is the guy. Here's the deal, Brent. My PI guy. Here's some pictures.
This is an actual line of dialogue. Apparently Megan has become some kind of hacker for hire. She breaks into websites. She steals information. She sells it to interested buyers. How would a PI know that unless they're like, I don't know, like a digital forensics expert or something, you know?
Well, it's in the year 2000.
Yeah. And Brent's just like, and it's just like, all the evidence of this is just like a photo of Megan, like a telephoto lens, just like talking to some other person, you know? And it's like, You got all that from these like long distance photos, sure. Okay. And Brent's just like, wow, man.
The picture of Ned here, he looks like some kind of hick.
Mm-hmm.
Like, okay, are they playing year 2000 Ned as like taller and skinnier? Because he looks a little portlier in this picture than when you see him when she goes to his house later.
I'm going to say no, because this is the same show where they're trying to pass off like clearly summer is winter, so I don't think they're trying that hard.
Okay, this isn't like
I think maybe it's just an angle or something. Like I did think that like there's some scenes in this episode where it seems like Sadie not Sink, what is her name, Sadie Sink. Stanley, her dye job looks like it's fading in this episode. Like, oh, you probably haven't touched that up in like a week or two,
because it seems like she's typically a brunette.
like IRL, but like she's been kind of blonde in this show, but like it seems like they haven't touched it up in a couple weeks, like when filming this. So yeah, Bren's just like, wow, man. And then Steve has to get up and monologue about that Ned Fonce. He's been after me for years. Fonce. Complaints, lawsuits, threats. That guy's unhinged. And it's like, why are we hearing about this in episode 7 of your murder mystery? And there's going to be like, there's going to be this big incident later, like the day before this kid went missing. And it's like, it's weird that that never came up until now.
I'm rewatching. If you just took the 2 seconds where Brent is like, yeah, for sure. Like the way he moves in the scene is so funny.
I think this guy, this actor, I think might be one of the better actors on the show. And he's really been dealt like a shit hand to play because like, yeah, this character is the dialogue is just like kind of too like misogynist to believe in a way. Like it's not even like clever. It's just like a parody of what a misogynist person would say.
that's what we need. Just light touch of parody.
It's just not convincing. Like it sounds like you're just trying to think of like the worst thing somebody could ever say to someone. Well, but like what they'd probably like be more subtle and asshole-ish about it, you know?
Like I said, that I think our first episode, when this show started, did I want people filming underage girls without their consent and then like broadcasting the world? No, obviously nobody wants that. But like in his first scene when Isabella is introduced to the group, I was like, okay, we've got like a George Sanders-esque cad. Mm-hmm. He's not tipped his hand into like full misogyny. He's not gone like full, I don't know. I think what the way people charmingly tell themselves what Chuck Bass is as compared to like his actual list of crimes, like that's what we want. We want the guy who's like a little knowing, a little snarky, little sleazy.
He has the dialogue of like a bad web comic where it's just like we're just being really obvious and ham-handed about everything, you know?
Oh, he's but like he's gonna make the wrong comment, it's gonna go bad, and then like 2 years later he's on Joe Rogan.
So what if Fonce finally snaps? He bumps into Luke at the cabin and kills him.
It's like Steve's just like, all right, I've got a patsy. Let me take the dumbest member of my family, and if I can convince him of the story,
I love
we're
the
good.
Part where it's just like, remember that scuffle in the parking lot? And I'm like, no, I haven't seen it yet. It didn't happen until later in the episode.
Okay, so yeah, the scuffle in the parking lot, which I don't know. I guess it's supposed to be foreshadowing. It's poor foreshadowing. But no,
it's dumb because like it would. We should have heard about this if like. If there was like an altercation and threats, you know, with a local weirdo the day before your son went missing, like I feel like the sheriff would have mentioned this by now. Like this would have come up.
Yeah. That, and I think the heel turn of Luke should be flip flop to the colorblind sequence that we get in this episode.
Okay.
Like I'm just saying, oh, and we'll get to it, but I'm just going to spoil it right now. If you actually saw the two of them get together, and then she overhears him.
Because it saps all the charm out of what should be like a romantic moment. Like you're playing it up as like this cute romantic moment, but you've paced it after the reveal where he's like a douchebag. So I think maybe the writers just didn't really know how to deal with the three timeline format, like because they really have done a poor job of using these timelines to like comment on each other. Like that was something that I think Real Summer season 1 did really well. But this season, I think they don't know how to work with it. And it's just like, it keeps hamstringing them.
Well, and I don't think there was really ever the sense. If you ever had the sense that the timeline wise, these three things don't make sense. Mm-hmm. It's like, if you actually went back and looked, it's like, okay, they do here. There's a couple of moments where I just don't think you had enough time or you thought this out. It just worked anyway. Mm-hmm. So he's like, Steve's explaining that like, so obviously like Luke would have bumped into Ned at the cabin and that's when Ned must have killed him. And Brent's just like, yeah, okay.
It just kind of blinks a lot.
I'll buy that. I'll start this picture one more time. So back into summer 99, they're still cleaning up like red cellar cups everywhere. Luke is like wiping down the table.
Declare that they're off beverages for a year.
Yeah, they have so much extra soda. No soda, off beverages for a year. She says the morning was gnarly, though. But the party was one of the greats, Luke says. Hall of Fame level.
He's definitely, it feels like they're both sort of nibbling around what they want to talk about. Because she's like, oh, I'm glad you had fun. He's like, yeah, big time. Even, you know, some of it was a blur.
Yeah.
Especially the end of the night, especially. And he's kind of like, there's like these pregnant pauses where it's like waiting for somebody to acknowledge it. And she's like, oh, it's your party. You can black out if you want to. Ha ha ha.
See, I would have actually done something kind of crazy at this episode. I think where I would have done all the year 2000 stuff first, then play the summer 99 stuff like straight through. And then gone to the winter 99, because it's like,
if memory serves, in Cruel Summer S1E9, they play it pretty chronologically, right? Am I?
Yeah. Because it's the entire, like,
because it's like, well, this is important that we kind of tell this as one segment. Yeah.
Well, because, yeah, you need to feel, I don't know what you would call it, the courtship, not the courtship, but the living, the domestic bliss.
Yeah. And like the curdling of what she thinks is her domestic bliss. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So, they're being cute, or it's being played as like they're cute kids who can't talk about their feelings. Isabella's like doing something at the sink, and she's looking at them like, just finger each other already.
Well, at one point he's like, oh, I gotta go lock up the cabin before the storm. And Isabella's like, Megan, you should go help him, right? And Megan, just a complete dunce, is like, oh, I'm sure Luke can handle on its own.
Yeah.
Like, come on, Megan. Like, I needed more from Isabella. Just be like, idiot, you know, like making faces like behind Luke or something. Like, I'm setting you up here. Like,
yeah, doing the signal
Here is just the softball pitch to you.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like a scene out of MTV's Undressed, Megan. Mm-hmm. Like, you need to get in on this. Man, I missed that.
But then Luke is like, oh, it would go faster with an extra set of hands. I just need you to clean everything for me.
Seriously. Although, even this is undercut, because later on, the big storm we're hearing about is a thunderstorm.
Yeah. Anyway.
So this is where this boggles the mind. They're in summer 2000. It's the lawyer and Megan in the interrogation room, and this like Garrett Reynolds cop comes in, and we find out that like she's not being charged of anything to do with like the Luke Chambers murder. That they found evidence of fraud linked to Megan's computer. Like, she deleted her files or protected her files, but they went through the
Department of Licensing.
Yeah, because they don't have a DMV there. And that they found that where she downloaded the watermark and made the fake IDs.
So you're being charged with a misdemeanor for making fake IDs. And then it just like hands the lawyer like a manila envelope with what looks like two papers in it or something. And he just like stares at it like, maybe we have the room.
I love that he's like, maybe we have the room. And I want the cop to be like, sure, there's cameras everywhere in here, but by all means, and have a private conversation.
This is where I wanted to lose my mind. She's like, oh, I'm going to lose my scholarship. And he's just like, you're like, yeah, don't get ahead of yourself. And she's like, no, there's an honor component to it, which I've been episode like screaming seven. And pounding the table about for weeks. And in episode seven, they're like, oh, wait, maybe we need to try to like backfill this in and make this make sense. No, you needed to do that like six episodes ago.
You need to do it in episode one before the sex tape was even a thing for the audience. Mm-hmm.
And it, even with this line of dialogue, it still doesn't make sense how it all plays out. But yeah.
Yeah. Oh, it gets even worse, though. It's even more insulting when the principal calls later. Mm-hmm. But I love that it's like, They can't just bust Megan on the murder. It's like she's Al Capone or something. They got to get her on the fake IDs.
Well, she's like, there's got to be something you can do, please. Can't you like appeal it or get it reversed?
And he's like, and he's open
like,
shut.
He's just like looking at this piece of paper. And he's like, nope, afraid not.
Open
she
shut.
She hasn't even been convicted yet. What the fuck are you talking about? Like, have you already pled it out or something? Yeah.
He's like, sorry. They got she's your ass.
Like, I have the worst fucking lawyers. You're lucky you were 17 at the time, otherwise it'd be a felony and jail time. Okay, well, if she was 17 and it's a misdemeanor, that would mean it'd be on her like underage record, which would be sealed and it would never get out. And so it wouldn't matter, but the show doesn't care about that.
I'm sorry, I'm just going to go to it now. The principal calls later and says it's school policy to call you.
What the fuck are you talking about?
She's graduated high school. It's not
that
school
is the
policy.
Worst writing I've ever heard. No school would ever do that. Like, what the fuck?
I mean, the only way you could make that work is if the principal also added, by the way, Megan, I think you're a slut or something, you know?
Let me tell you how you fix this scene, first of all, because the only reason they would be charging her with this is to put leverage on her about the Luke case, right? Like, we need our boy. We need the sheriff. He needs to be here because he rules. And he needs to be like, guess what? I don't have anything. I can't charge you anything on the Luke case, but I've got some juicy shit here that I can make your life a living hell with. And she'll just be like, well, how's a minor? You know, the records are sealed. And he'd just be like, not if I leak them to like UW or whatever. And like basically like full threatening, like, I'm going to fuck up your life unless you roll over for me.
Here's the problem, though. That means that she's going to flip on herself. Right?
Maybe. We don't know. We don't know what. Like, yeah.
He's like, plead to the murder charge. I'll make
He could be saying like we both know it was Isabel or whatever. Like you just
or
have
Debbie,
to, yeah,
or your little sister.
He could be saying, "I know you know more than you're letting on. Like you know, you're protecting somebody else. Like if you don't roll over them, you're going to get rolled over yourself." And you could even then trace that back to like maybe the sheriff's got some leverage on him from Steve. Like knows about his like gambling debts or something, which is like kind of like everyone's kind of putting the screws on each other. You know, like just like heighten the tension. Like you could make this show interesting or you could just have terrible like plot points that don't make any sense in like the world that we live in.
Also, what if during all that the sheriff is like talking to her lawyer and Megan and he like does a thing where he puts one leg up on a chair and he just starts like curling.
Starts curling, yeah.
Just does some dumbbells. Mm-hmm.
I like it.
Gotta get a pump on. This lawyer is just like, sorry, man.
So that's it? It's just over? And he's like, sorry.
As your lawyer, I'm going to tell you right now, you're fucked.
It's just, I know we're asking a lot from this show. I'm not asking for like, just like a lawyer wrote this and vetted everything. But like, come on, you know, like people who have watched a few episodes of Law and Order over the years are going to be like shaking their heads at this.
Yeah. Also, this is like the second summer 2000 scene where you have ended on this like close up of hacker Megan with big anime eyes. It's like her world's falling apart.
And we're going to do it a few more times too.
Yeah. So summer 99.
They're carrying in fucking like firewood for this place. It is July 31st.
Yeah.
They're acting like they're like closing this place up for the winter.
Yeah. He makes a comment about the control freaks love preparation. And she's just like, is that a comment about me? And it kind of.
It takes way too long for these two to start making out. Like it's like we got to watch them clean for a while. And then they discover some walkie talkies. Well, and they play around with that. And they run around to the beach. And yeah.
What's frustrating. See, why if it all played out as one sequence.
Yeah.
Like one elongated sequence, you'd have something. That scene of them on the walkie talkies is almost cute, and then it gets unintentionally hilarious when Ned shows up.
Yeah,
but yeah, so there's flashlights and he gets a little burn on her when she's like, do any of these work? And he's just like, well, I don't know, but that's why you get such good grades, huh? And you're clicking them on and they don't come on. Here's some batteries, you know, bitches love batteries.
And he comments out it's nice to hang out just the two of them, it's been a while since before Isabel got here. And she's like, oh, you doing okay with that? And he's like, yeah, no, I'm totally fine. Didn't see it coming, but it was probably the right call, which, I don't know, okay.
Is this where she mentions Jeff?
No, not yet, no.
You could talk about the Jeff thing right here.
Yeah, no, instead she says, I'm going to go look for candles.
Yeah.
Like, is somebody staying at this cabin where they need all this prep? I don't know. Is it an Airbnb situation where they're renting it out to somebody for a while?
It's just like the Chambers fuck cabin.
Yeah. Back to winter 99. They're walking out of the store, the Party City store. And then Luke is like, oh, shit, I forgot my wallet all the way back. Did he really forget his wallet? Like, this seemed like such weird like engineering to get him away from Megan for a second. But sure.
Oh, also, I could not get over the Gigundo like industrial plant behind this like... Like wherever in like South Carolina, North Carolina, they filmed this, like whatever, like fish processing.
Yeah, you can see it says like fish food, bird seed, and these like giant silos.
Yeah. She's still wearing her like Statue of Liberty Y2K crown.
Do you think she paid for that? I mean, the sheriff like cracked down again, shoplifting.
I think it was an adorable thing where it's like she didn't take it off and she just like tilted her head. And like the woman like scanned it at the counter.
Luke just grabs her head and slams it onto the counter.
So like meanwhile, like two spaces over, like Ned is loading up his cheap Cherokee.
And flips the fuck out because he sees that she is celebrating Y2K and just the frivolity of this world ending incident that's coming.
Well, it's like what off your meds scene is this supposed to be?
It's like, this is not a joke. I thought you got that. Which in the scenes we had last week's episode, it was like, hey, I need you to come help me test out and make sure my case is like Y2K bug fixed. You know, it wasn't like there was never a vibe of like I'm an insane prepper. It yeah. was like, oh, I just need to make sure that my security system isn't going to go haywire because of a Y2K bug.
Well,
I mean, he's a little. Yeah.
The door was left open for yeah, some but
not,
of that.
Not but nearly enough.
Prepper is one thing. It's like this guy believes in a cult of the millennium or whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. And again, just to be that guy, the millennium would actually be happening from the year 2000 to 2001.
Yeah, that guy, huh?
The year 2000 would technically be the end of the 90s.
Just get out of here.
It technically be the end of the 90s. Because, you know, 1 through 9, the year 10,
I don't remember it from you back in the day.
No, because
we celebrated Y2K.
We did. We had a sequence where a friend of ours almost pissed on an electric fence that night.
That was fun. Yeah.
Yeah. And then we wrote a script and a scene of it where he had blackened pubes afterwards. I could still picture in my head how that would look if you filmed it where him getting like from behind gets zap. Oh,
comedy gold, yes. I say.
Oh, it's that script was great. Yeah. So at one point, like Luke runs. Anyway, so Ned, they write Ned like he's clearly a guy who's fine when he's on his meds.
Yeah, he seems completely insane. Y2K is not a party, it's a crisis. He's kind of like grabbed her shoulders and is like shaking her, you know. And so, of course, Luke comes running back like, oh, what are you doing, a trans offer? And he kind of like pushes him away.
That should be like a paperclip hitting a wall.
Mm-hmm.
Because this guy, this actor playing Ned, I don't know who this guy is. He looks like he is destined to someday play Vincent D'Onofrio's little brother.
Mm, yeah, I can see it.
That's his whole vibe. He's also the VIP of the episode for telling Megan that she can do a lot better than Luke.
Yeah. Just because you're doing some computer thing together does not mean you can lay hands on her, Luke is saying. Didn't realize you were her keeper. Like, dude, you're 40 or something. Like, what the fuck?
Yeah. But half of his mannerisms are D'Onofrio's from, like, Men in Black. Aw, mm-hmm. Aw.
Do I need your permission to talk to her?
Yeah. Well, it's like, I love Luke, who has the physique of, like, I don't know, a piece of origami.
Luke is, like,
gets thrown up against a car. Like, it's like, yeah, that's right. You realize how brittle you are.
This guy's got at least 8 inches on Luke.
Yeah.
He's, like, towering over him, yeah.
And I don't mean this sexually. In every way.
Yeah. Megan is headed for greatness, he says. You're just a spoiled little loser that's pulling her. And yeah, I don't know. Like, it later on, they're going to treat it as though, like, Luke has, like, punched this guy, which I don't think he ever does. This guy, like, throws him against the, like, side of his Jeep or whatever. And it's, like, threatening him. It's like, you know, you're going to get a very harsh wake-up call, little Chambers, and it might just be your last. And he, like, storms off. But, like, later on, it's going to treat it like, oh, Luke assaulted this guy, and, like, he's got to stay out of trouble. Like, this should be such a slam dunk for Steve.
Well, here's what's missing from this scene. 7 onlookers. You can see one dude in the background. Because Steve talks about how he gets like 3 phone calls about this later.
Mm-hmm.
There's nobody here.
Yeah. Well, and also, like, if we're going to like try to make Luke the villain or the instigator or whatever, like, we need to like have him like throw a punch or something.
Yeah.
We need to introduce the ambiguity. To be like, oh, maybe Luke took that too far, rather than just like, no, this dude is clearly insane and like putting hands on people, and like these are teenagers. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
if this happens, you're not going to be like that fucking kid. You're going to be like, dude, that guy's insane. He's like throwing up that little shrimp 17-year-old against the side of a truck.
Yeah, yeah. And she, I think after this, doesn't she treat it like Luke was the one who was in the wrong?
She's like, oh, like, you need to chill out.
It's like they're both a little crazy,
but I think Ned is way crazier.
Yeah
Well, if you walked out of the store and saw some dude like grabbing and shaking your girlfriend, you'd be like, well, dude, what the fuck, a trans offer, you know, like that's kind of a normal reaction.
Yeah, well, but again, he's also an adult.
Yeah,
doing this. Yeah. Also, this might complain from last time, I'm sorry, what hacker sword in the stone did Megan pull out where Ned Funtz is like, she's destined for greatness.
Yeah, I know. She can code. She knows regular expression. Yeah.
Meanwhile, back in front of in the same Home Depot parking lot with this giant fish cannery in the background, there's Megan, like, just going to buy some home goods, like, after being charged with a crime.
Running into Jeff, who's packing up for a road trip. His parents are driving him to USC next week because he's going to go to USC film school.
I like how he's just like, we're going to make some stops on the way.
It's going to make a real road trip. Cool. Good to know. So we find out, like, she kind of...
I'm sorry. I didn't think you were going to make the 20-hour drive all on Coach Jeff. So like, he really imbues. We're going to make some stops on the way.
Yeah. So he asks when she's leaving for UW, and she's like, oh, I'm not sure it's happening now because it got, like, rolled up for those fake IDs I made. You know, I'm going to lose my scholarship. And she's just like, shit, man. It was me. I totally narked on you because I got rolled up for like trying to buy a six pack with a fake ID. And the sheriff like made me tell him like where I got it from. And she's just like, you fucking narc, you asshole, you know, which like just the L's that Jeff keeps taking on the show. Like, just come on, man. Can we give this character a little respect?
So we saw him at one point. He was like in the police station, like throwing dirty looks at Isabel and Megan. So that's what that was. What we're not getting is, do you remember how the two girls like met him in the middle of the night in the road?
Oh, she briefly mentions that here. She's like, I kept your secret. You couldn't keep mine.
What I feel like the show is just like, we're never going to tell you because fuck it.
Mm-hmm.
Because I guess his secret is however he affords his camera equipment.
There's no good answer to that at this point, right? Like whatever they say is going to be dumb or vaguely insulting.
Yeah, but it's just like the show's not giving a shit about Jeff since the moment Jeff showed up on the show. He's just been there to like step on rakes.
Yeah, and he's like, oh, I'm real sorry. And he's like, yeah, you said that. Have fun at college. And like storms off. And he's just like, ah, man, thank God I'm going to USC, though.
I wonder to like push over his like shopping cart or something.
Mm-hmm. So later on, winter 99, they're back at the house. And Megan's just like, geez, Luke, since when do you get in fights? I don't need a bodyguard. He's my friend. You just made it worse. Like, I don't know. That guy was coming on pretty fucking insane. Like, I don't think it's a completely unreasonable reaction that Luke had there.
And also, if I did need a bodyguard, I wouldn't take a sheet of paper and fold it into the shape of a boyfriend's. Yeah. So he's just like, yeah, maybe we overacted, whatever. And she's like, yeah, why don't you just chill? I'll take a chill pill, huh? That's something we say in the 90s, right? Mm-hmm. Chill pill. So like she's like, oh, he's just spinning out about Y2K. You know, that's no big deal. His pager goes off because he's a pager boy.
His pager goes off and he goes, great. 10th parents came home early. The party's off. It's like, you got that from a pager?
Not a cell phone.
You got that from a fucking pager? Like, what code did you guys have that said, oh, shit, my parents are home. The party's off. Like, if I send you like 3239, this is what it means, you know?
There was only like four codes, if that, back then, right? And one of them was 187.
187, 143, 911. Yeah, like there weren't that many.
Or then for our friend Anthony, 00000.
Mm-hmm.
I think we've told that story before.
We probably have, yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, she's just like, oh, maybe it's a sign, an omen. And he's like, Megan, it's the end of the century. That's not for a year. We got to do something legit. And she's like, it might, or he's like, it might rain, so the cove's off. Costa Chambers is a no fun zone. And, you know, it's like, maybe we could have it here. And it's like, you're not having the party here. Fuck this.
And she says, my mom has a flu. Let's just bail. And he's like, wait, the old cannery down by the water. My dad just bought it. Turn it into stores. The perfect place for a party. And she's like, or we could just forget about it. I'm not feeling that great anyway. Maybe because you have the flu too? No, of course. Like, the pregnancy reveal here, just the complete lack of setup. Like, we have not even seen her touch her stomach or throw up at any point in the past six episodes. Like, come on, what are we doing here?
Well, the problem is, it's like, he threw up last week. You can't have her throw up, too.
But it's just, it's out of nowhere. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, there was nothing to suggest. Like, suddenly she's just taking a pregnancy test. And it's like, oh, like, why, where was the scene where she thought she needed one? Or she went and bought one? Or, yeah.
I who knows what the next three episodes have in store. I don't think you need the pregnancy thing at all.
No, it doesn't seem to add much. Yeah.
Especially since she can absolutely not want to go to a party in public after A, this incident with Ned and this guy in the parking lot that apparently 1,000 people saw. But also, 2 weeks ago, everyone watched her fucking for 30 seconds at a party.
Even though they thought it was Isabel, yeah.
Or yeah, whatever. Still, that would freak you out though, right?
Yeah. Yeah. He's just like, no, we'll figure something out. I mean, he's very much just like it's Y2K. I need my party. You know, I'm going to like want this to be a night we remember for the rest of our lives.
Give baby a treat. Baby needs a party. Yeah. We get your two favorite close-ups, the way too high up.
Yeah, so weird angled down. Like, I don't know why this is a thing that Bill Purple likes to do. I don't understand it.
Oh, at the end of this episode, Bill Purple becomes Yorgos Lanthimos because there is some close-ups that are like fucking funhouse crazy.
Excited for Poor Things?
I am so excited for Poor Things.
When is that coming out here? Like October?
Not soon enough.
Yeah.
It seems like an October movie though, doesn't it?
Yeah, totally.
Yeah, he's like, this is a party we're going to remember the rest of our lives. This is the party where I finally swing a three-way.
Mm-hmm.
So Winter 99. Everyone's
fantasy, just like that Just Shoot Me episode.
Wow, you're referencing you're a topical reference for the era of this show.
I try, man. I try.
Well, let's see. Laura San Giacomo, Veronica Mars's dad, David Spade, the chick who played the dentist on, or no, the Wendy. The chiropractor on Seinfeld?
I just remember her from what was the name of that? It was a dirty show on HBO, Dream On.
Oh, was she on Dream On?
Ooh, yeah.
Fucking Brian Benben.
Yeah.
Was the plot of that show that the guy was raised by TV, so he just has like weird pervert TV fantasies?
And there's like guaranteed to be one nude scene per episode, yeah. That was back before HBO peak TV.
Yeah. It was HBO.
Yeah.
We gotta have tits. Bobby HBO Jr. was like, I gotta have tits.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, so Winter 99, because they did a full day of filming of Paul Edelstein in this office. He's in his office taking deals.
Hold on, like, well, I want to see if he's wearing the same exact clothes. I just back up for a sec here.
I would not be shocked. I'll just say the line. He's on the phone. He's like, yeah, well, that's a 17-year-old boy for you. More testosterone brain. You so badly want to say young, dumb, and full of cum, don't you? You so badly want to say it.
He probably should. Maybe it's different. He doesn't have his tie on in this old one, but it's very similar.
No, because, you know, PI report to Brett. You got to take that tie off. So we get this weird kind of like setup shot from the hallway outside, which at first I thought this is needless until like we do have a scene out in this hallway. Mm-hmm. But we see that this is firm. Apparently it's called
Chambers and Lambert, or perhaps Lambert.
Also, it's pretty comical, this sign, because there's a bunch of space underneath for something else, but there's nothing.
By the way, I think we've passed one of the mentions of it. Aliens are mentioned twice in this episode. And I like, as I'm watching this awful show, I just start to daydream, like, what if they fucking pull aliens out of nowhere in like episode 8? Like, take that, like, twist reveal. But I know they won't.
So we think Steve did it. He like shoots Luke in the head. End of the episode, wrap it. Then post-credit sequence, Luke like wakes up on the dock. He's like, oh, it just was grazed. And then like, chung! Light from above. They like take his body, they float him up to the thing, they anal probe him as they fly him back.
All
to
of episode 9 is the anal probing, yeah.
In a Yorgos Lanthimos close up of his face. Luke comes in. Like,
let me finish that idea. So the aliens, they're done probing him. They're like, we got the information we need from the anal probing. We're going to pump you full of painkillers and send you back down. So he's back down full of painkillers or muscle relaxants or whatever. And then he runs into Megan. He's like, fuck you. And just like pushes him into the ocean or the lake and walks away. And like, she thinks he'll be able to swim back, but he can't.
I thought you were going to say, which make it even better, is that we'll drop him off back where we picked him up. And instead they just drop him in the middle of the ocean, like 5 miles.
Oops. We're 10 feet off. Oh, well.
I was just thinking of the Kate McKinnon, Ryan Gosling SNL skit where they're talking about the being captured by aliens. And she's just like, I don't think I was dealing with the top brass. They just kept kind of patting my boob. Anyway. So I feel like when they pitched this character to Paul Edelstein, they were like, here's the thing. You're just going to be the cool dad who does a lot of like talking down to your knucklehead sons. Because that's what he's geared up for.
Yeah.
He like does a thing where like he's on the phone and like Luke's in the doorway and he's just like pointing at the seat, like your ass here.
Yeah. And then as soon as he gets off the phone, he says, look, it's Chatham's own Oscar De La Hoya. Sorry, he didn't throw a punch. What the fuck are you talking about?
He kind of got thrown around more than he threw around.
Yeah. He was the assaultee in this situation.
Yeah. Yeah. He kind of found out more than he fucked out or whatever.
Fucked around. Yeah.
Yeah. Also, in this scene, we're going to find out that the Ned... I was like, this is a real undercut. The Ned lawsuit is about a property line? That's it?
Yeah.
I was like, I thought you were going somewhere with this thing.
I don't know. I guess Ned seems like a spiteful asshole, so he would like really make a big deal out of it, but you would think he would just kind of like settle that. You know, just like just suck, fucking take care of it.
Yeah. Also, third call I got in this thing. Who's calling you? There's no one there.
He's like, oh, you just enjoy causing shit storms. First little tape blew up my Northland deal, which he seems fine from. Like, it doesn't seem like he's like any real like a financial turmoil over that, right? Like,
yeah.
I was expecting more from that. Like, oh, this is going to ruin him. But no, it seems like he's fine.
Time to bring in Lambert, see what he thinks. What you don't get, listener at home, is that he's referencing the joke from We Hate Movies whenever they would do their impression of Christopher Lambert from the Highlander movies.
They don't need to know. I know.
Which they reference his fucking bizarre accent, which isn't quite French. Duncan MacLeod. I'm Connor MacLeod.
Now you go around town assaulting the town lunatic.
Well, it's like, I feel like this is the kind of town where you get points for that. Well,
he says, Dad, he started it. And Dad responds by saying, are you 5 years old? And he's like, no, he's not either, though. Like, come on. What? He's a fucking adult. I'm still a child.
Yeah, the you don't go around hitting people, he says to his son. Which I remember, like, Norbuck would tell stories about being the director and reading the script and, like, having to take people aside and be like, that never happens. Mm-hmm. Are they saying
this? Yeah,
yeah. especially not litigious jerks like Ned Fonts, who's a little war with me over his property line. It's already costing a fortune.
How much? Why? Just settle. Like what do you need to do? Like, yeah.
Is Fonts like, I'm going to keep this in court for decades?
Mm-hmm. Fonts doesn't seem like the kind of guy who wants to be in court that often.
No,
just the impression I get. Yeah.
He doesn't want his name on records. He doesn't want a paper trail. I mean,
are we talking like a 100-acre like dispute or something? Like, are we talking a 10-foot dispute? Like, what are we doing?
Yeah, but like Luke's just like, you always say being a man, it means standing up for what's right. He was being handsy with Megan. I tried to put a stop to it, but he says it like he's like asleep.
Mm-hmm. Good instincts, lousy execution. I mean, if anything, you'd think this would impress Steve, but not even that. Yeah.
No. Steve's just like, remind me to murder you.
Well, he's like your actions have consequences for this family, unlike your older brother who can do no wrong.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm legally changing his name to Steve Jr. because he's that good.
And so Luke just kind of sulks out of there. Yeah. Back to summer 99. We're still prepping for, you know, this hurricane or whatever that's coming in the cabin here with Megan and Luke.
Yeah.
And he says, great. Now we just have to secure the kayaks down at the docks.
Do you?
Yeah. I don't know. She finds some old CB radios and they reminisce about the good times they had when they were children, you know, and it's like, well, these are so cool. They had such range. They worked all the way down at the docks. I wonder if this will come up later. I don't know. Like, I feel like we're spending a lot of time like setting up, you know, remember that time you got lost in the woods and these things have great range. I don't know. We'll see.
I'd like to point out, she's reminiscing about some great prank that she thinks she did with Luke. And it's like, no. It turns out you actually did that with Brent.
Douche chill. I mean, I think that might support your theory that they're going to like somehow set her and Brent up at the end. Like, oh, Brent was the good guy all along.
Megan Brent endgame?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's such a like, oh, remember the time we pranked your brother like this? He's like, no, that was me you pranked. Oof.
Yeah, yeah. And he's like, this is why I've been planning my sex tape revenge. I also, I'm doubling down that Luke did the sex tape.
Yeah, that seems obvious now. Either, she mentions how scared, oh, sorry, go ahead.
I was like, either it was like some old thing of Brent's, but, or he just found it, like whether he intentionally filmed them or not, but he definitely played it.
Yeah, yeah. So she's mentioning how scared he used to get when he was lost. And he says, my internal compass is broken. Maybe that will be important later. I would have found you. I've always found you.
Stay alive. I will find you.
Yeah. So all the comments about the prank, which turned out to be him. And then she says, I feel like half my childhood was spent up here. Just you and me, the best parts of it anyway. And he's like, oh, they still have batteries. We should finish the mission. Like, cause they play like secret agent with him or something.
Yeah.
So summer 2000, we're getting the download from Brent, who has seemingly come straight from the intel meeting with Steve to like spill the beans to Megan. She's like, oh, your dad's spying on me. Like, what the hell are you doing with Ned Fonts?
Yeah. she's like, Ned would never hurt Luke. And he's like, well, sure, didn't seem that way in New Year's Eve. And it's like, were you there?
Why haven't we mentioned this like 5 episodes ago? You would think this guy would be the number one suspect immediately in any sort of thing where he went missing. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, then, so Brent's just like, oh, but here's the other thing about that Ned Funtz. Did you know he stole $1 million worth of intellectual property from his former employer? And Megan's just like, eh?
And he assaulted his boss? Put him in the hospital? Eh? Uh-huh. Brent's just like, just my advice, stay far away from him. He says, look, you're like family, and suddenly I'm a good guy again. I know you didn't kill Luke, but Ned, he's going down. If you're not careful, he's going to take you down with him.
Yeah. We should point out we're filming, or we're not filming, we're recording this on Labor Day, so fuck your boss.
And also, like, producers, pay your fucking actors and writers.
Yeah.
Let's, what are we doing here? It's Labor Day. Let's get going.
So your theory was you already lost. Your theory is that it'll end in a month or a week? What did you say yesterday, the other day?
I think it's within the next 2 weeks. Like, I think it's starting to become clear that the studios have lost this one and they're going to have to settle up.
I saw something with the guy, I can't remember his name, the negotiator for the WGA. The
negotiator. Was his name General Obi-Wan Kenobi?
No, the guy from the SAG, that guy. Mm. And he said that he talked to the organization the other day and they said they have no intention of negotiating.
We'll see after Labor Day. After Labor Day is when like shit starts happening again after people have been taking all summer off, you know, for in businesses. And so it's like, pressure's going to be on.
Mm. Now I can see the full sign. It says Chambers and Lambert developers.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, it's not developing, it's the show. So we're in winter 99. Brent's just been chilling in like a shirt that I think Bill Cosby would have worn back in the day.
Cosby sweater. He's just heard Luke getting his ass reamed out by Steve.
And he's like, haha, I know that reaming. I'm no stranger to the reaming, bro. Mm-hmm. But you've got a disappointment shirt. Anyway, so they're having a little chat in the hallway outside Dad's office. And Brent's the kind of guy who's like, look, my advice, just keep your head down. Don't argue. Take it.
Just lay low for a while. And he's like, the thing is, like, I totally wanted to, like, steal the keys to the cannery so I can have a party there tonight. And so Brent's just like, oh, I'm going to pull you a good bro move. And I'll go, like, I'll just walk 3 paces over to this cabinet in the wall and open it up with my key and then, like, hand you the keys to the cannery.
Yeah.
And but
I'm not going to be there because I'm a good bro.
Yeah. And he's just like, just don't get caught or I'll sell you out. We get some dialogue, like, even the sheriffs are going to avoid it. Like, no one's going to be there. It's going to be totally isolated.
I'm sorry, is the cannery in the bad part of town? Is it near Arkham Asylum? Why are the sheriffs going to avoid it?
I'm just picturing our guy, the sheriff, he's just getting in a pump, you know, like 9 o'clock at night, and the fake Garrett Reynolds comes in. He's like, hey, we got some reports of a party over the cannery. Should we check that out? And he's just like, fuck no.
Is he like watching a game on the
TV? Yes, of course he's, he's got like the fucking Cotton Bowl on or something.
He's just like, you don't understand. I've got like 20 quid on this Australian dog race on the other side of the world or whatever. I'm a gambling addict. So, summer 99.
I mean, if I were making the show, I would just find ways for the sheriff to be more involved. I'd be like, I've got a live wire on the cast here. And it's not fucking Luke Chambers, that's for sure.
I would recognize, here's the thing. You can do one of two things. You can have the meal or you can have the people who eat. Mm-hmm. You got a guy who can eat.
Yeah.
Just let him eat up all your shitty story. Yum, 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 yum. Like the Langoliers. Well, summer 99, Megan and Luke are running carefree through the woods.
I feel like they spent more production budget getting some of these like slow-mo running shots, like with the dappled sun coming through the forest trees. It looks like they tried in this. Like, it looks like a fucking Noxzema commercial.
I feel like any second now, 1979 by the Pumpkins is going to start playing. Mm-hmm.
Which only makes it funnier that, like, as like Luke never noticed that Megan was hot until she, like, put her hair down in the last episode. Like, it's not like she's all that in it here or anything. It's like, okay, she's in overalls and a ponytail, but, like, it's still, like, she has, like, amazing skin, you know?
Yeah. I just don't know how you don't cast Rachel Lee Cook as her mom. You know what I mean? Like, you could have just had so much fun with that.
I think we need some 90s actor to be the adults, right?
Or Alicia Silverstone. You need somebody in here. What's Scott Wolf up to? He could have been Steve.
Oh yeah,
like babyface sleazy guy.
That would have worked actually. Yeah,
yeah. So then we cut back to Winter 99, and I feel like Bill Purple, he loves to, like, we're gonna put the camera here. We're going to put you in the background. You're going to walk here. I saw this in a Soderbergh movie. It's going to work.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's deep focus Citizen Kane shit. You know what I'm talking about? Orson Welles.
Yeah, yeah. He's just digging a hole in this bathroom. We get the camera even lower. Yeah, so she's like sitting on the bed and she's going to come. We're going to get the pregnancy test.
Well, she's just sitting there kind of like, I don't know, you know, ruminating. We're like, oh, what's going on with her? And then she walks over to the bathroom, looks in the mirror, looks down, and oh, it's a pregnancy test that I guess she's just took the music, the test for. It's so weird that this comes out of nowhere.
Yeah.
So, oh no, she's pregnant. She's horrified. She makes that face that she makes at the end of like 50% of her scenes.
Yeah.
So, mirror ball, it's party time after the commercial. Winter 99.
Look at the fucking like it's, set decoration.
Yeah, I mean,
this is over the fucking top.
I will accept
to be one episode.
I will accept like A doing this in like their bunker dungeon because, you know, A is like thoughtful and plans ahead. But it's like you started this 3 hours ago.
There's no way it would look this good.
Mm-hmm. No, it's not like this is a party for them and their like group of friends or like eight people or whatever. There's like 100 people here.
Yeah, who it's, the fuck
it's massive.
Are these people?
Yeah.
It's like the party from last week times three. Who the fuck are all these people?
Also, there's like an entire boat inside of this warehouse. I'm not sure why. Is that a thing that, like, do we have canneries have boats in them? Like,
what are you going to take the cans to the water? Put them on the boat? No, you bring the boat to the cans. Obviously. Obviously. Also, is this where fucking Crazy Town and Butterfly is playing?
Oh, yeah, probably.
Oh, God. That's fucking song. That's like the worst song of the 90s. Although, I will say, this show would have been genius if this entire season, pick a character, either Brent or Luke, but every time they showed up, the little riff from Butterfly started playing. Just so you know, we got a real douchebag here.
There's a brief moment here where some guy walks by who's either in a costume or he's just a weirdo because he has some sort of like military vest and pants on and like a tool belt with like flashlights. And like, I guess he's supposed to be some sort of Y2K crazy guy or something, but he's a teenager. And they're like, oh, look at that guy. And they like, it's like the show wants us to note him and then dismiss him. If this guy matters at all, I'm going to be so annoyed. It's episode 7. You can't introduce something like this now.
No. Lucas from PLL.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's not like this guy hasn't been there since episode 1 being a weirdo or anything where we're going to be like, oh, he's there again. Maybe he's a suspect. Like, who the fuck is this?
Yeah. Also, the Butterfly music video, I think, is the first time that a lot of people were exposed to a guy with double nipple piercings in a music video. Because we weren't really seeing Tommy Lee like outside the sex tape.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah,
so
this party just is, it's just infuriating.
We're you know, we can see that the Luke wants us to be romantic here, but Megan, you know, she's got shit on her mind, obviously, because she found out she's pregnant. And he's asking her about Y2K and is something crazy going to happen? She's like, oh, no, like the banks might be a little screwed for a while and the sheriff's radio might start working, but we don't have to worry about the party getting shut down. Like, it'll all be cool.
Well, here's where Amy becomes a character. She says, I've been holding out for the right guy.
Is she a character or is she just
the
writer's just like, give me dumb blonde bitch. And they're just like, I got it. Yeah, I don't want to die a virgin.
It's like, yeah, I think the show hates this girl.
Yeah, the show really does.
Even her friend is giving her a look that sells her out. Like, mm-hmm. Oh, wow. And
Jeff is filming all this, so we're kind of intercutting with, like, you know, footage, which, like, I feel like in a better show, like, say, Cruel Summer Season 1, we would have seen some of this footage already by now.
Yeah.
And, like, it might be interesting to see, like, oh, we've seen this one clip from a video and now we're going to see the context or something like that, you know.
You could do something fun, I think, with, not that I want him to die because he seems like a sweet baby face guy, but like if you killed Jeff or something, or Jeff had died, mm-hmm. and people were finding his VHS tapes or mm-hmm. something, even where every episode
just a secret like, tape, yeah,
like, or every episode ends for no reason, just with an unconnected like clip of a couple of the VHS tapes as like previews for upcoming things.
It's something more with the video. Yeah, I think we could have gotten a lot more creative there, but I feel like that would require them taking like all the scripts from the show and like before they shoot and be like, okay, this is a good start. We're going to go back in the writer's room for another 10 weeks and we're going to make this something good. You know?
Well, like I kind of wonder though, is this show part of the reason that we have the writer's strike? Because this show has a whiff of a mini room, right?
This has to be a mini room situation. I don't know how it couldn't be because it feels way too like disconnected and kind of like inconsistent.
Well, isn't that kind of also what plagued the perfectionists? Like not that they had like a small group, they had a fairly reasonable group, but like they wrote everything before they filmed. Mm-hmm. And then there was the scramble, like you had the showrunner scrambling.
Which is funny because on PLL, they're doing 22 of those a year. So obviously that's a machine where they're like, they're writing and filming and like, they don't have time to go back to like episode 6 when they're on episode 17 and be like, hey, we need to like put this in here. You know, like episode 6 has already been filmed. And yet I feel like they were much better. Like they knew how to tell their story so that they could adjust and massage when they needed to without like whole retconning as much as possible until they fucked up the timeline, obviously, you know.
You know, you need young writers. You need young writers from diverse backgrounds, especially if they match the stories and the characters and the cast. You also need a seasoned professional or two, mm-hmm. or somebody who
somebody's been better around the block. Who
understands
a few times,
how a fucking show works?
Well, somebody, a writer who's been on set, you know, instead of just in like a mini room. Yeah, I mean, it's all the stuff that Strike is about. Like, you're not properly developing these writers as you know, like their career. So. They're one and done gig employees,
which is how it used to work too. It's like mm-hmm. you were in the writer's room, you know, except for like the week that you were writing, and then 3 weeks later, the week where you were on set because they were filming your episode. Because you would have these sequences where somebody would be like, "Hey, this sequence doesn't make sense," or mm-hmm. "Hey, we need a line that actually cuts
or,
to this
hey,
much quicker."
We couldn't get this actor. Yeah, you know.
Yeah, or we can't fit in the schedule to go film this sequence, and then you're like, oh, just have Steve be in the same office for both time periods or what have you. Anyway, so Fred/Tim says to Amy, hey, I can like totally help with that, and she's like, die, eat glass and die.
She said right guy, not mouth breeder, says the other Parker? Girl is that Parker?
That's Parker.
Okay, where's the other one?
She's to Parker's. She's to Parker's right.
Okay.
She is like totally, like, so you can see her to the right of Jeff. Okay. She was like totally scowling at Amy during her thing, mm-hmm. selling her out. She's like, I have no dialogue. I don't know. I would love to know what was the original Parker. My understanding is they did a lot of like cutting of Parker and like re-envisioning her character. Like she had something to do with the music industry or something.
Sure. Eric reveals that he's afraid of the robo-apocalypse.
Cool.
And they all just kind of laugh at him. I don't know why we don't get like a Terminator reference here. I don't know.
Yeah.
So they all laugh at him. And then we're back to the Noxzema commercial in summer 99 again. They found their old fort, which I guess it's their old fort. We don't really see it too much. I feel like maybe they didn't have a ton of time to dress the set here.
Because they were too busy hanging lights.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we get the most egregious anachronism yet. That's what she said.
Is it? Because obviously that's what she said. Like, everybody remembers it from The Office. But isn't it in The Office, he's saying it, like, way past the point where it was, like, a popular saying, which is, like, part of the Michael Scott joke of it?
So, what's the original?
I'm not sure if it was 99 old, but it was at least a few years old by the time The Office got to it. Because I think that was, like, the joke of The Office.
I would love to know from people, got to it from where?
Mm-hmm.
Like, what is the etymology of that's what she said?
Mm-hmm.
I took it as this is one of Michael Scott's like phrases that he happened upon, whether he coined it or not, and he's going to run it into the ground.
See, I always interpreted that as him like making a what's up joke, like, you know, years after it was popular.
You could be right. I am genuinely asking.
Mm-hmm.
I could sit here and Google it, but I feel like that'd be rude while we're recording. But like, somebody tell me, what is the etymology of that's what she said? Pre-office.
All right. You have your assignment, people. Let's get to it.
Yeah. I love giving people assignments.
So, and then, you know, it's like, oh, this looks so much smaller. And he's like, I don't know. And he's seen something a million times and he know what it is. And suddenly one day it looks completely different. I'm sorry. She's saying this, not him.
No, she says, it's like when you're a kid and something is gross or seems weird. Like you, Megan. That's what he's saying.
Yeah. But now it's awesome. She's like, right. And then she just shoves him and goes, race you to the dock. And he runs off again. So, sorry, guys.
They could be doing something interesting here where...
I mean, just repeat that line for the entire show, yeah.
like, yeah, seriously. But like at the party, it's like, okay, she had the liquid courage. She was like gearing up towards the reveal of feelings. Here, she doesn't have the liquid courage and she's still nervous because this is like her friend.
It doesn't seem like she's any different between the liquid courage and the non-liquid courage kind of, right?
But she seems like she's backing away from the opportunities more. Okay. And like retreating into their juvenile thing. There's even like somebody has spelled out Y2K in Christmas lights on the thing. This is a company you would hire to do this. This isn't Luke.
It's just the mirror ball that's spinning isn't a mirror ball you can buy from Party City. You like rent this from a DJ for like who charges you like $1,000 or something.
Yeah, it's the real fucking deal. So, or speaking of which, we're in Winter 99 and like Megan's at the punch bowl. And like Isabel comes up as she's like scooping out some punch and she's like, try my Y2K cocktail. It's in 2 hours. It'll be obsolete, which is I laughed. It was funny.
And Megan's like, or not. I mean, Isabel's like, not bad. Okay.
She like kind of grimaces. Yeah. So like she's like, oh, she's noticed that Megan's not having any. And she's like, oh, I've already had several. I'm just trying to pace myself. And it's like, okay, we saw her for Red Solo Cup earlier, but it could have water in it. Whatever. Mm-hmm. Nice crib, major upgrade from what? I'm sorry, did you see the cannery beforehand?
Luke made it happen.
He's a real magician, we're told. Yeah,
it's just there's it's all these scenes between Isabel and Megan this episode play as though Megan or Isabel knows that Luke told Megan about the kiss, or you know what I mean? Like I don't know, it almost seems like she's playing it as though she knows that there's tension or something.
The way they're filming the close-ups is fascinating because you've got like for when you're looking at Megan, you're at the extreme right. The camera is like over Isabella's shoulder.
It's always like the back of this person's head's taking up like 40% of the frame. Yeah.
But so because her hair is very dark, it's like just black blur. Wall.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's such a weird. I don't know. There's a great. Is it Every Frame a Painting about like where to put the camera in a conversation? Mm-hmm. One of those videos.
Yeah. The other way is wrong. So anyways, yesterday at the plunge,
you're ever gonna quote.
Yeah, that's the only one I need to quote. It's just like, what did Luke say? Luke said you kissed him. Last I checked, ride or die, I didn't include macking on my boyfriend. Now macking, that is something we said.
Something we would say. Yeah. Return and of the Mac here.
Megan replies with, yeah, that never happened. He kissed me, which isn't the most convincing way to reply to that, but sure.
But what I like, though, is that it doesn't really seem like Megan ever doubts that. Now she's frustrated. Like she's like, channeling her frustration.
Why,
why wouldn't
you
tell
anything?
Me? Yeah. But she's like, it's like she's accepted it. She's channeling her frustration to Isabella, not telling herself. So I guess they're painting as Megan, deep down, she knows that Luke is just like a shitty dude.
Yeah. But, I guess. I have like, so many problems with the Luke character in this episode.
So Isabella is just like, you know, I assumed it was a mistake and I didn't think you'd believe me anyway. Now Megan's upset. Like, that's not true. And
what about like, your loyalty to me, having my back? Did it ever cross your mind? You know, yeah.
You always pick your side over his side over mine. She's like, you're literally doing it right now. You're supposed to trust me, Megan. Give me the benefit of the doubt.
You can't do that anymore. And then she just like storms off. Yeah. And so Megan then storms off on her own, is looking around, runs into Amy, says, hey, have you guys seen Luke? And Amy says, I think he and the guys went to go get more beer. They have an entire keg there, but I guess they need more beer.
Which means that they're just like playing grab ass in the parking lot.
I guess. Also, I don't know if we've mentioned, Megan is wearing kind of like a sparkly pink top and like black pants at this party. And she has like a little, it's one of those like little chains where instead of like her name, it says 2000 on it. I guess they sell those at Party City.
Yeah. So cut to summer 2000. We're at Ned's house. Look at Ned here. Does he not look slimmer and taller?
I can't tell. I don't know. He's wearing black. It's slimming.
Is he just?
He was wearing like a vest in the other shot with like a white shirt underneath.
He's like, I don't know, man. I tell you what, Megan, I was so crazy about the Y2K thing. Since then, I've just been juicing.
So he's like bringing her some coffee and he's just like, you know, expositioning, like she's told him about the fake IDs thing. He's like, oh, that's a bunk. He's like, yeah, but it's gonna show up in my record. If UW finds out, my scholarship's toast. Can he hack the court's database and erase it? And he's like, no, like there's already a paper trail. Like, also, like, are you sure you've been convicted yet? Like, what do you mean? Like,
yeah
so paper trail. She's like, oh, you're my last hope, my last chance. He's like, diploma's just a piece of paper, man. Plenty of famous coders never even finished college. Says, I can't count on being one in a million. I need a degree. Only if you insist on playing by their rules. By their, I mean society.
Well, I mean, it's like, in another story, it's like the two of you would create some bullshit business right here. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, or go, I'm sorry, step into the garage and then create a bullshit business and take over the world. I mean, I want him to be like,
in 1999,
different.
In 1999, if you were at all like a reasonably good computer programmer, you would have a job. Like, they did not care if you had a degree or not.
For at least another 3 months, right?
Yeah.
He's like, what if we started an online bookstore that'll eventually take over the world?
It's like, you know, I just had this vision in my mind. Just like, just picture this in your head. Pets.com.
She's like, that's interesting. I was actually thinking nuts.com. Hmm.
I think that exists.
It does. They all exist.
Yeah. So he scoffs. And then she realized, I didn't just come to you to ask you to hack like the fucking court's website. I need to tell you that like Steve Chambers is like up your ass now, and he's going to try to like prove that you killed Luke.
Yeah. Ned groans is the actual thing on there.
Claims he stole his IP and you attacked your boss. Yeah.
You can't steal what was yours to begin with.
It's kind of flipping out here. It's like, well, did you sign one of those things where you agree that the intellectual property you generate while working on for your employer belongs to them? Maybe then you can.
Isn't that like a famous part of the Google contract? It's like you have a percentage of your time to work on your own projects, but like if it goes anywhere, they own it.
Every tech company has something like that. Yeah. Like you can't. If you're doing it on company time, like it for anything really, like if you were writing a book on company time, they own that book, you know.
But so Megan then steps outside the cannery to the docks, the fucking docks, and there's the boys having a chat around the keg.
Yeah, the keg around light. The keg. Mm-hmm. This is Tim or Freddie and Eric, I think, are the three here.
Yeah, Eric is like, I once dated two chicks at the same time. Takes mad skill. You wouldn't know them. They went to a different school.
Yeah. Well, the first line we hear is Luke saying, yeah, Megan's been really chill about the tape. You know, we're all good. And Eric's talking about dating two chicks. Wouldn't think he had that kind of firepower. And
he doesn't.
Tim, I guess this is Tim, says, you know, I've been ponying up Isabel. Maybe I can take Megan for a ride if you want. Wait, what does that mean? I've been ponying up. Does that mean he's been sleeping with Isabella?
I think he's been sidling up to her, is what he's saying. I think. And so Luke, in a like kind of just lazy, rolled out of bed way, is like, yeah, in your dreams, dude.
The way they have Luke playing this is like kind of like jock asshole.
Yeah.
Just kind of like just meathead like prick who like treats women like objects, but like he's shorter than the rest of these guys. They even have Eric sitting down, and Eric is still kind of taller than him. And this characterization doesn't make sense with the Luke that we've gotten. It's just, it's kind of like shrimpy rich kid. You know what
here's
I mean?
The thing. Luke Chambers treats objects like women, man.
I know.
No, but it's like one of these kids needs to be the, what's his name? Paul Walker. You know what I mean? Like they need to be making
he's
a bet.
Be fine.
Yeah,
oh, was I a stupid bet? Yeah, sure. Something like that. Yeah. Or like, yeah. I think the casting is just wrong for the Luke character. I think Luke needed to be a little more big man on campus, maybe a little more unknowable. And it's like, oh, it turns out he's just like an asshole sociopath who just like wanted to prove that he could fuck anyone he wanted or something like that.
Or you cast him as like the Luke character's like asshole friend who's like the one who's just like, but we had this bet, you know, for 3 months now or whatever. Because he seems sleazy. He seems inherently sleazy. And they've been trying to play him wholesome.
Yeah. They've been playing him pretty much wholesome, except for like a few moments, you know, in like the last episode, pretty much. So yeah, this turn to me kind of comes out of nowhere. Like we saw it was coming just because like there's only so many places you can go on a mystery like this. But like the acting and the characterization was not there in the past for this to really impact at all. It just kind of seems like, I guess he's a different character.
Yeah. So as you said, playing out the parody of misogyny here, Eric is like, let me know when you want to try to level up. Okay. I'll give you some tips. To which Tim says, nah, he's not ready yet. He's still got training wheels on. Mind you, far as we know, Luke is the only character having active sex on this, of these three. And like, Luke is just like, whoa, I can handle both of them. No problem. All right. Okay, I got them wrapped around my finger.
Of course, Megan is listening to all this from the shadows. It's like, oh.
They are far enough away that these guys must be shouting.
Yeah. Eric says, better if they're wrapped around something else at the same time. Menage a Luke, baby.
Oh, can you just imagine? Oh, just take the Luke out of that picture. He's like, yeah, you know, I'm teeing it up, Luke says. Oh, I busted a major move of Isabella after the plunge, bros. She couldn't get enough. And Eric in falsetto is like, ooh, there it is. Okay.
This dialogue suggests somebody who's both deeply insecure, but also like much more full confident than Luke is. You know what I mean? Like, it just it doesn't add up to like the character that we're seeing, like spouting this dialogue.
I just was so desperately wanted Jeff to sidle up and be like, what the fuck, you guys?
Yeah.
I need to correct my bros. This is some serious fucked up ways to be talking about our lady friends. But Tim's like, that's what we like to hear. You saw me with Isabel on the tape, Luke says. I've done it before. I'll do it again. And Megan is like, world. Like, we're like playing this off Megan's face as like her world is ending.
Yeah.
And then Tim's like, he's grown up so fast. Look at Chambers go.
And then the ultimate dagger here, Luke says, you know, I got to get some practice in for college. Ooh.
I just realized their names are Tim and Eric, like the fucking comedy show. God damn it.
So he's just getting some practice in for college, man. It turns out Luke was just a fuckboy sociopath the whole time. This has just been a long con by him.
Gosh,
it just doesn't really add up with the way they've been portraying him in the rest of the show.
Well, you know who he's not? Trent McNeely.
No, he's not. Trip McNeely.
Trip fucking McNeely.
He's not Logan Eccles. He's not anyone. He's not a cohesive character, in my opinion.
What if Peter Facinelli had been Steve?
I mean, better show.
Better show.
All right, so... I mean,
shit, Billy Burke would have been... What's his name? Is it Billy Burke?
Billy Burke,
the sheriff? Mm-hmm. Yeah, he would have been a better sheriff, too. So yeah, meanwhile, back in
summer 2000,
time for some fucking hacking.
Yeah, Ned is hacking at his like battle station here. I don't know what he's doing exactly. He says, if Chambers is looking into me, I'm going to look into him. I like how every time he starts, he sits on his computer, the like the shade opens or closes automatically. It's like it needs to get darker in here.
Or it's getting lighter here this time, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. Sorry, I was going backwards there. Yeah, it's opening for some reason. I don't know why you need more light for this.
First of all, you should do this in your automation quest for your home. But I like the idea. It's like, when I go to my computer, it must be darker because what I'm doing can't be seen by the light. No. But yeah, like there's like this weird, you know, they got the green filter. There's like this weird piss yellow thing on the fringes. It's like this gothic palette of grunge.
So she notices he has like a whole, like a monitor with a whole bank of different video feeds. And she's just like,
uh-oh.
Have you always had those cameras looking out towards the road? He's like, ever since I moved in, wonder if this will come up later. But then she notices, oh, like that's Steve Chambers' car. Like driving up the road, he can't know I'm here. And he's just like, you slip out the back, I'll take care of him. And he like gets up and grabs a shotgun. Like, okay. So she like runs out the back of this place and like, oh no, there's Brent waiting for her for some reason with this asshole smirk on his face.
Because he's a good guy. Mm-hmm. But also, again, the shot makes sure that we know about the fucking like jig-junk, the thing on the door. Mm-hmm. And it's like, okay, so how is that going to come into play? Who gets locked into Ned's house? You know what I mean? Is it Luke? Does he spend 2 months locked in Ned's house?
Maybe.
No. Because we see Ned in summer 2000. Was he just like in another... He's just like, I was on my fuck tour in Thailand for 3 months or whatever. Like, but yeah, so she runs into Brent, who's just like, I don't know, like he's a cop. He knew to take the back.
Yeah. And it's like, okay, sure.
He's like, haha, I always take the back door. He's giving her this kind of like smarmy, I knew it look. And then he gives her like a go that way nod.
It's too many different things. You can't be just like, aha, I've busted you. And then be like, get out of here. You know, like I'll cover for you.
Yeah, you old scamp. Meanwhile, unintentional comedy of the year. Steve is out front, like marching through the woods, yelling, Fonz!
Fonz! The way that Ned is holding this shotgun is very awkward. I don't know. Maybe it's just because it has like a big stock on it, but he's like, he's got the stock like tucked into his shoulder and he's pointing at the ground. And like, he can't really like move that thing around very easily the way he's holding it, you know?
He looks like he's never held a shotgun
before. Yeah.
So we start off with like what could be Steve being a good guy yelling, "Megan Landry's a teenage girl. You have no right dragging her, no business dragging her into your business." And then he's just like, "Yeah, Megan's not your concern." And then it's like he abandons it. Like, he's not the good guy. He's just, I don't know what this is. Who is this for?
She is. I want to know the truth. I want to know how it went down. What? So Luke found out you were doing something illegal, so you killed him to keep him quiet, keep him from talking. Yeah. Is this all like a performance for Brent or something?
Is Brent your like star witness that you're cultivating?
So he's like, you know, get the hell off my property. Brent's like, come on, Dad, let's get out of here. Like, this dude has a fucking gun. Like, let's just go. And the dad's just like, hold on. It's okay. It's okay. Just mega asshole energy from Steve here.
Yeah, I'm going to be watching. I'm going to be waiting. I'm going to be waiting for you to screw up.
Every time you turn around, I'm going to be there. Yeah. Take and I think we get a shotgun cock at some point.
Yeah, we do. There's some cock in there. Yeah.
Take your threats and your kid and get the hell out of here before it gets ugly, Ned says.
The way I laughed out loud, I had to pause when I was watching this because Brent puts his arm on his dad's like shoulder. The way Paul is physically is just like, let go of me.
Well, Brent's like, just like, come on, Dad. And he goes, don't touch me.
The way he physically moves is so fucking hilarious. It's got a real like Napoleon body language. Mm-hmm. I'm just going to roll these sleeves up a little bit more.
Yeah. And he's like, you're not going to do anything. And then they finally leave. Yeah. So back to summer 99. These two have been separated on their way to wherever they're racing to.
They're joking that Ned has landmines on his property.
Yeah, they took a shortcut. Ned's like the Unabomber. She says, chillax, I know the code to use if I need to abort. Or maybe he says that.
Yeah. So this is played. Okay, so they're going to build up to like almost kind of the reveal. And I was like, okay, this theoretically could be cute. This idea, it's almost the Peggy and Stan phone call at the end of Mad Men. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? They're going to tell each other how they finally feel. They just couldn't say it to each other's face. And then they're going to run to each other and like kiss in the middle of the woods. Mm-hmm. That's where you think this is going. And it almost feels genuine, despite the fact that we ripped the Band-Aid off on Luke being a dirtbag like 2 minutes earlier. But she's like telling him about how Jeff dumped her. I don't know. I'm skipping through some of this.
Yeah, she says, I mean, at first it sucked, but I'm okay now. And she's like, did you copy all that? And then it cuts back to him and like, oh, he's like, the whole tone shifts because there's somebody in front of him and the camera pans around and we see it's Ned, like just like glaring hate at him. Like, well, I thought this was well directed. I just don't think this was the place for it.
Well, so, okay, now I'm watching this with no sound, no music, no nothing. And I don't think this is a hate look. This is a Ned saying, awkward. I just walk into something awkward. But then it gets even unintentionally more hilarious because Ned says to Luke, that feedback is terrible. You should change frequencies. I want Ned and Debbie to end up together at the end of the show. Yeah.
So Ned's just like, you're giving me the thing. And Luke is like, oh, I'm really sorry. Okay, I got turned around. I didn't realize this was your land. And Ned says, you know, I value my privacy. I don't appreciate anyone trespassing my property. You know, then he gives it back and says, try it now, and it works. And so it's like, oh, thanks. And he's like, stay on your side of the line, and walks off. Like, I thought this was well directed. It's cool. It's tense. This scene should have happened in like the pilot or like episode 2 at the latest. Like, we needed to establish this in summer 99 way earlier than we are now if we want to make Ned an important part of the show.
Okay. So the language, the cinematic language of the close ups, we get this above forehead shot looking down at Ned as he's talking to Luke. But then when we do the reverse, we're like below the chin with Luke looking up at him.
I know. I don't
it's
understand.
Weird. But like, it makes Luke look very childlike and innocent. But like, so does Ned. Like, he's just fixing his walkie-talkie for him.
Yeah, so he I guess runs back to his side of the line. We have no sense of where the line is ever. They're just like, okay. Because they go in opposite directions of each other. So I guess Luke was already heading off the property when he ran into this guy or something.
I don't know what this Hatfield's McCoy's nonsense is. Wasn't there something with spray paint on a tree that Isabella saw? Is that the line?
Previously, there was spray paint. I don't know what it meant. Maybe it's the line. Like, yeah.
Does Luke like come out into like the woods in the middle of the night and start screaming, and then like Tom Friendly shows up and he's like, "This ain't your island, boy.
There's just one thing. We're gonna have to take the boy.
Also, you can have Kate back. She's bad luck."
So he gets, you know, his radio back, and the guy Ned walks away, and he's just like, "Oh, sorry, you know, like got lost for a sec. I'm on my way, took a detour. I'm on my way back now. Presumably just never mentions this weird interaction with Ned, I'm guessing.
Yeah. So then we cut to the New Year's Eve party, Winter 99. Jeff is just walking around, filming all these reactions, filming people's things. Amy and the other girl, they're doing the tongue thing. 10 minutes of the millennium.
So he stops like, her.
Did they love this actress? Like, did they just love this actress who plays Amy? Like,
I mean, they don't love her dialogue wise. But no. Jeff's is filming everything. He stops Megan. He says, "Oh, what can everyone expect from Megan Landry in 2000? And she says, "I'm going to take charge of my own life, my own destiny. Stop being played."
He's like,
"That's cool. A weird thing to say. Did I miss something?" She's like, "No, it's all good. It's just no matter how well he thinks he knows someone, you don't. They can still surprise you."
Meanwhile, watch the baby oil girls in the background. As they're like dancing on each other in the most bizarre way.
So Jeff's just like, "Well, that was weird." And so then Megan goes and runs into Isabella and she's like, "I need to talk." And Megan or Isabella's like, "Yeah, it's not a good time." And Megan's like, "Please, it's important." Kind of like drags her away. She's like, "Oh, you're totally right about everything. Luke's a liar." Megan's sorry. Well, and then, or Isabella's sorry, but no, Megan's sorry. I never should have doubted you.
Here's my question. We saw Isabella talk to Megan by the drinks earlier at this party.
Mm-hmm.
What the fuck has Isabella been doing at the rest of this party?
I don't know. Chilling.
Like, she's not really.
I mean,
made
she's supposed
connection.
To be a social butterfly, but I guess she's an outcast now. So yeah, I don't know what she's doing.
So is she just like bouncing? Is she doing that thing where she just walks over to a group, just kind of stands there and like smiles and nods as people are talking? Yeah,
we call
realize,
that the Benjamin Light.
Yeah. Oh, okay. And then people realize, oh, we got an interloper here, and they just slowly disperse.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
Is that the Benjamin Light?
That's Benjamin Light at parties for sure. That or just like find a corner and get really drunk.
Okay, so not quite the wallflower, more like the
the gin blossom.
The gin blossom. There you go. Yeah. So she's like, "I feel so stupid. How could he do this to me now?" I guess he's always been doing it to you. And she's like, "Well, he just wants to be the good guy to everyone, but especially to you." I don't know if Megan had said he wanted to have a three-way with us, and like Isabella cracked a smile, would we then cut somewhere to George Costanza like smiling and nodding?
On the freeze frame right now, it just says Megan sighs in the closed captioning. Yeah. So I should have seen it. Don't beat yourself up. He's not worth it. Okay. Let's just jet. Come on. We can still salvage tonight. Just the two of us. And
let's Megan's go scissor.
Like, I'm not letting him off that easy. And then she says, he's not going to get away with this. And then I think Jeff is just like weird, like filming in the background, like with his camera. I don't know why we're cutting to him really.
Like there should be, just a whole episode that's just shot from Jeff's perspective, mm-hmm. right?
It just seems like this videotape should mean more, and it hasn't yet. Yeah.
No.
Maybe
and she's
it
like,
will.
I want to make like Luke like regret having ever met us. And then the camera is like crazy close to Isabella's face as she's just like
gives her no classic more. Blank faced. Yeah.
Well, it's like she's gone like full Terminator mode or something. Mm-hmm. So then Portishead is playing. There's no way Portishead's playing at this
fucking
party.
Glory Box. This song is too much about fucking for this party, in my opinion.
Yeah. Well, Megan is going to march up in slow-mo. She's going to have some real Aria, like, fluxing between different timelines energy. Where, like, her expression... It's like, I was like, okay, this is almost an interesting thing for this actor to, like, really play. Because she's, like all over Luke... Really playing it up. It was going to be a night to remember.
Well, she kind of morphs from like Terminator on a mission to like suddenly the smile is on and she's bubbly girlfriend. Yeah. And she's just like, "Oh, let's get out of here." You know?
Yeah. And he's like, "Oh, yeah. Where's Isabella?" And she's just like, "You motherfucker." Oh, she bounced. And then Parker's job is to say ADR 5 minutes to midnight
mm-hmm.
and be a woohoo girl. And so we got the glory box. We got to give me a reason to believe.
This next scene is so fucking stupid. Summer 2000. Megan walks in, and is she checking her voicemail? No, it's an actual phone call. She walks in. It's late at night, at least it seems to be, because it's dark everywhere.
Yeah.
Maybe, I don't know. Maybe it's light, still light outside. She answers the phone, "Hello?" And it's like, "Megan, it's Principal Bowers. Sheriff Meyer told me about your legal situation."
Why?
Per school policy, I was required to inform the University of Washington. I'm afraid they're going to have to rescind your scholarship. I'm sorry. This writing is so bad. It's just like, no, that's not how any of this would ever work. Why would the sheriff tell the school? Why would her fucking principal, even though she isn't a student there anymore, feel the need to like go narc out to like U Washington about it? Like, It's just bad.
The only way you say this is if the principal is just like, by the way, I think you're a skank.
We you know, just, like there's it, no motivated, like,
it needs to be personal.
Yeah.
She's like, oh, I'm really conservative, and you're just a real hoe bag.
I mean, we could have cut out the principal entirely and just had the sheriff be threatening to call UW directly or something like that, you know, and also, of course, have mentioned the whole honor thing like 20 episodes ago. It's just
cut to the sheriff on the phone working on his back muscles as he's just like lifting things, just lifting the desk.
So Megan just kind of collapses, doesn't say anything, crying with the phone in there. Megan, are you there, Megan? Okay, like, I guess we just, you know, we pulled the pin on that grenade, so that scholarship's over. Sure.
Or like, Sadie, we want you to be all over the place in this episode. Yeah, so summer 99, you know, she's at the dock waiting for Luke. She's like, oh, you don't need me to find you? And he's like, no, I made my way. So they're sitting on the dock. Fucking Colorblind by Counting Crows is playing. It's like one of three good Counting Crows songs.
Well, and this is like
I hate Counting Crows.
The song for the big, you know, romance moment in Cruel Intentions, where like they finally, him and Reese get together.
There's not even an escalator here. Yeah.
But it's just like, you can't just like steal like a I don't know.
Yes,
there's certain songs that are like tied to a specific cinematic moment. And you can't just be like, oh, we'll just do the same thing.
I'm surprised, if it wasn't an 80s thing, I'm surprised Luke isn't outside her house with a boombox playing In Your Eyes.
Yeah. I mean, it'd be like if you're making a monster movie and there's like a montage of like people getting whacked and you're playing Layla. It's like, no, Goodfellas already did that. You can't just do the same thing.
Mm. Yeah, because Cruel Intentions, Goodfellas. It's the same. It's the same thing.
Or, you know, you're having a New Year's Eve party with a crazy coked out guy and he's playing Sister Christian, you know, like, and setting off firecrackers.
Now, we needed that guy. Mm-hmm. We needed Rehad Jackson in this New Year's
Eve.
And
Cosmo.
Party. He's Chinese. So, yeah, they're holding hands. They're doing some hand stuff. I'm sorry, Spaleb owns this. They own
hand
stuff.
He's got a scar. Yeah.
But does it make any sense to play it the scene like this, to show it like this after?
No, it doesn't. Because it's like, it's unironic. It's just pure schmaltz, like, you know, them reminiscing about childhood. Those are the best times of my life, too. Other things were lousy or great. You were always there. Yeah, you too. I can't even picture a world without you. It's like, what are we doing? If 6 months later or a year, 6 months later in the winter, it's like, oh, no, he's actually been like a weird sociopath this whole time who like didn't care about her at all. Like, why did we reveal that and then put this scene in?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think There was a great interview, I think, with Marty Noxon talking about Joss Whedon, which is weird because you and I will still praise Joss Whedon's writing abilities, which
he's
is
a fucking good writer. I'm sorry. He is like
the world has turned on him. But like in her interview, she was talking about on Buffy, they would like write scripts and they were like 90% there. The 10% they weren't there was the biggest thing, where Joss would come in and be like, what's the emphasis of the scene? Why is the scene end here? Because if it ends here, you're saying that's the emphasis. It should end here. That's the punch. The episode should end here. That's the moment. That's the joke. And I don't know.
I mean, then Marty Noxon went on to be a great writer, and she should, in theory, be, you know, developing other writers in her writers' rooms along with her. But we don't really do that anymore. You know, so it's like the lineage is coming to a close.
Because she went on to go do Unreal, right?
I think that was her. I think she was Sharp Objects. Let me see, Marty Knox.
The pilot of Unreal is Unreal. Devastatingly good. Devastatingly good. But yeah, like this, they want to end this with this moment between this Stranger on the Train moment here or whatever, where Isabella and Megan are gonna like go cut Luke's head off. It just seems weird to like not have this earlier then?
Well, because this thing ends, he says, I remember what happened last night, what almost happened. And she's like, oh, it was a crazy night. Everybody had too much to drink. And they were all acting like idiots. And he's like, no, I was being an idiot. You ever wish you could go back and just undo something? She's like, yeah, control, delete. And he looks
quite how that works.
Yeah. And then he kisses her and they make out.
Yeah, as the fucking colorblind is really ramping up. And it looks good. I mean, it's well shot. here.
Marty Noxon was a writer on that The Woman in the House Across the Street from the Girl in the Window show. Wow. I did not know that.
That show is fun. To watch Kristen Bell take out her wine glass and fill it with the entire bottle of wine. That show is fucking
Bad
fun.
Men, Unreal. Like, yeah.
Yeah. So was she on Mad Men too? Good for her. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So then we cut back to the New Year's Eve party as like Luke comes and gets Megan. He's like, it's starting. And like all the main characters, all the main teens are like, who is the guy with the fucking hair and the Tyler Durden glasses in the background? They're all gathering around the TV to watch the ball drop.
I'm just looking for this Tyler Durden guy. I don't know who you're talking about.
He's like right over, from our perspective, Luke's left shoulder.
Okay.
When you're looking at the TVs from the TV perspective.
Oh, okay. Yeah, no idea.
He looks like the guy that dies second in Mindhunters. not the David Fincher show.
Not the David Fincher show, no.
Someday we're going to do Mindhunters on Headcanon, the movie that only you and I have seen, but mm-hmm. I somehow watch that movie once a year.
Yeah.
Also, we need to do Perfect Getaway.
Oh, yeah. Uh-huh. And Identity, like, too.
Did we not do Identity?
I don't think so.
I feel like Perfect Getaway, it's one of those movies, it's not a great movie, but it's almost like Rear Window, where it's like, you could just lay out, here's the steps to a perfect thriller.
Yeah.
Perfect reveals, perfect setup. Anyway, so woohoo, the ball dropped.
And then they kiss, and she's like, can we get back to my cabin, just two of us? And he's just like, yeah, let's go.
He needs to be like, I actually need to lock this place up.
Yeah.
Although, if there was like a 20-minute, like, all right, everyone, out of here. Just doing that thing. Come on, everyone. Gotta go.
I mean, I feel like the next episode is inevitably going to have the thing where he thinks he's going to get a threesome, but then they turn the tables on him, right? But like,
are they going to like do like Elliot Page in that movie where they like cut off Patrick Wilson's dick? Hard candy. Are they going to hard candy him?
That's not hard. Not too. Hard candy only had her, or him. Obviously. Yeah.
Right. It didn't have two, young women, but like, are they going to do like that? Are they going to do audition, or what are they going to do?
No, I think it's going to be a thing where he thinks he's getting a threesome, but then they handcuff him and leave him there or something like that. But like,
they're in Costanza him.
Shouldn't she? Because she's like, let's get out of here. I feel like we needed an extra line where she's just like, I've got a surprise for you or something. You know, just something a little extra to like, tease him. I agree.
Also, these close-ups. These are the like from The Favorite or something. They are way too close. They are way too fisheye.
Yeah. So that's the end of the episode. Fucking Luke Chambers is still alive somehow. I guess we're supposed to come away from this being like, oh, he sucked the whole time. But like, to me, it was more like, you wrote this character as kind of like a bland, wimpy, rich kid for six episodes, and then you decided to make him a villain. Like, there just wasn't enough there to suggest like a dual side. I think a lot of the problem is the casting. This guy, I think we just needed more of a like a Logan Eccles type for a character like this than this weird little shrimpy guy.
Well, I was going to say, since, I've done some of the body shaming, but so have you. Like, you need a guy with a little more presence.
Mm-hmm.
Like, just to show that he's there beyond. Or you need to lean into the, hey, man, we all just go along with your shit because you're rich.
Yeah, you needed to acknowledge so that he's just the rich kid and that's why he holds sway type of a thing.
But there are three episodes left. I'm really looking like hard to not look at the synopses. I would think that he would be presumably quote unquote killed like in the next one.
I would hope. Jeez.
But it almost seems like now you're too early. If you've been playing it this long, you would think he'd get killed at the end of the ninth episode, right?
Yeah. I don't know why we're dragging it out this much. We still never saw the body too, so let's just remember that. By the way,
one of these episodes are just like a close up of his like bloated, disgusting corpse.
Do you know what the name of the fake Garrett Reynolds detective is on this show?
We talked about it like 3 weeks ago. What is it?
Hal Hardwick.
That's right. Yeah, we talked about Hal Hardwick. Yeah. Sounds like he's an indie film director from the 70s.
Hmm. Apparently, we're getting Lily next episode. Remember her?
Yeah. Well, I mean, she's a child, but like, you'd think you would put not her in peril, but
I don't know why she's in the show.
Like the fact that Megan has a little sister should have been a bigger deal.
She doesn't seem to serve a purpose. Yeah.
No. And I think they sure thought she would at the start of the season.
Yeah.
I don't know.
All right. Anyways, that was It's the End of the World as we know it, ? Furies are definitely breathing down our necks for this one. Next episode is Confess Your Sins. Okay. Let's talk about some bland episode titles, man.
Yeah.
Like we're not even having fun.
No, anyway. We're not having fun. But they should all be named after 90s songs.
Yeah, really. Just have some fun.
All I'm saying is Michelle Purple, give us a call. I don't know what it is right now. Give us a weekend. We will pitch you
a better show.
Gorgeous season 3 of the show. Mm-hmm. It's not that hard. You've got a great, essentially a format.
Here's
something fun.
Let me get a little of my secret sauce and my pitch. It's going to be the show's called Cruel Summer. Yeah. Let's have it always take place during the summer. So we're not doing this weird summer for winter shoot with a blue tent that's obviously is still summer. I think that'd be a big improvement right there.
My only question, my two questions are, one, does it need to be anchored in the 90s? If so, I'm fine with that. Obviously, I'm fine with that. But does it need to be anchored in the 90s? Secondly, does it need to be anchored always around consecutive years? Mm-hmm. Can you do like a 30 years later thing or a 20 years later thing?
Can you get broader in the timeline?
Because those are the only, give me those parameters. We could have something great.
Yeah.
It would be period accurate.
Have we gotten any feedback other than Michelle Purple liking her tweets?
I felt so bad when I saw that. We saw something from somebody. Cool. Oh, please. Vamp.
Well, he's looking that up. Do you want to say thanks for listening? You can support the pod by rating and reviewing us the podcast app or your podcast app of choice. And if you want to support the pod even more, you can go buy our books. We have 3 mystery novels about a girl detective named Trouble. I promise you they're better mysteries in this season of the show. If you go to mynameistrouble.com, you can learn all about it. There's 3 books out right now, working on the 4th one presently.
Plenty of people have apparently enjoyed our Debbie stuff. So you're all bad people, just like us. And a friend of the pod, Kayla, says that she also learned the genie in the bottle dance with a group of girlfriends in 99. So that's true to her experience anyway.
Nice.
So there you go.
All right,
folks.
We're done. We'll be back next time. Peace out.
Bye-bye.